I decided that I have to take a stand when I feel like I should be taking a stand.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times when I worked for someone else, I had to do it because it was for someone else. And I had my boss in mind. Like, mm-hmm. I have to go answer to someone else. But when it comes to me, yeah, I may seem like a very hardcore person when I'm working, yeah. but I cave in. Like, I'm like, okay, then that's fine. If that doesn't go through, I have to figure something else out, whatever. But no, recently I'm like, no, this is my opinion and I'm going to say it. And this is how I think it should be. And I need this to come at this time or need that to be done at this time. And that's how it needs. Like, I've actually started to stand up for myself.
How do we inspire change with hope? How do women redefine innovation, carving their own paths amidst opportunity or necessity? Can these women vividly picture their desired future? Can you, dear listener, feel their passion when they speak? Our view of business and innovation is changing. It's a yes to success and ROI, but not at any cost. Welcome. You're entering the Worth Having podcast. I've enlisted bold women to tell me how they redefine, let's call it, feminine business. Get ready. Each story is filled with hope, ambition, and a drive for collective impact. Women know greatness doesn't happen in isolation. So this isn't just a podcast to listen to. It's a call to action. A call to join a vibrant community and be part of a new narrative. Your support isn't just encouraged, it's wanted. Our lives are shaped by stories, and that's how we, the women on this podcast, connected through She Told Me a Story, a networking event like no other in the south of Sweden. All our lives, we've been told stories, then we retold those stories, but now we're writing fresh tales. This season, you'll hear about the ideas we're passionate about. When women collaborate, their projects prioritize well-being for all. And our goal? Well, to create inclusive, diverse, and maybe finally even regenerative projects that foster a sense of belonging. And why are we doing this? Because we care. We truly, deeply care. Right. We're here. Welcome. Today. Hi. I'm talking to Amna Chaudhry.
Chaudhry, yeah.
Chaudhry.
Well, very good pronunciation.
Though. Yeah. Chaudhry Hellström.
Yes.
Hi, Amna. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
This is so nice to have you. And I was looking forward to talking to you. And we've been, before we just hit recording, we've been already laughing a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The mood is good.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Amna, you're here because you are one of the co-founders of She Told Me a Story. Yes. And for those that I've never heard about She Told Me a Story, can you give me your own words? What is it? What is it about? And why do you keep doing it?
Okay. Well, She Told Me a Story is essentially, it started and it still is, a networking event created by women, and it's for women. And the idea started with getting women from the tech background into a place where they could learn and speak to each other on a more womanly and more friendly environment, you know, and just get to know one another. Because usually when you go to a networking event, you're kind of like, here's my card and can you do something for me and I can do something for you. And it's very black and white, right?
Transactional.
And you don't really get to know the person that you're speaking with or potentially could hire or potentially could do some work with. And that's the main point of networking, is to get to know a person to be able to perhaps do something with them, you know? And so this was created to give that feeling and just discuss and talk about things that perhaps women go through in a work environment that they might feel a little withdrawn from kind of bringing it up at your work, and they don't know how to go about it, or maybe if they can't find work, how to go about that. So when it started with that, but very quickly it turned into something completely amazing. It just bloomed into this environment of women coming from all backgrounds, not just tech, women who also might be on maternity leave, or women that are still searching for jobs, or women in music, women in film. Like, there's all types of women that came there. And the stories and the issues or the topics that were being brought up resonated with a lot of the women that came there. And there were some emotional connections. There were some factual questions that could be answered with one another from experience. It's amazing. And it's just grown and grown and grown. So I don't think there's a very short answer to what it is and who we are and what we bring, because it connects women in such a way that there's no networking event, I don't think, does anything like this. We sit in the beginning, we sit down, we have, it's just become a circle now. It wasn't intended to, but it's like a circle of like conversation that we have, where we get to know the people in the group by questioning and talking and experience sharing and story sharing. And then we have a little mingle at the end where you do the networking bit. So it becomes more natural.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
so there's this concept that bring your human to work, right?
Yeah.
And this is kind of the reverse, like what did work or my experience of me in work, how does that affect me as a person?
Yeah.
And then we explore through conversation, through storytelling, the impact that these experiences that we have at work have on our humanity and of our soul, basically. That's
yeah.
It's a very nice thing. Yeah. And you are one of the co-founders, and you're also the main sugar supplier, sugar dealer.
Sugar pusher, I like to call myself. But yeah, I provide the sugar highs.
Yeah, exactly. Because she told me a story. It's just your side project.
Yes.
You actually do something else. And now I have one question in two parts. A, give us in a sentence what you do now, currently, but also give us a little bit, how did you get to do what you're doing now? And I would like you to go reverse chronologic. So from what you are doing now, before that, before that, before that.
Yes, I do provide the sugary good stuff for our She Told Me a Story. And currently I am working on Baked by Amna, which I'm trying to flourish. Baked by Amna is my baking hub. So I bake and I create and I supply fika to places. I do cake orders. I do those special wedding cake meetings where you get to choose your cakes and taste them and decide what they want to look like. So it's like super special. Yeah. So basically I just bake for people on order, and I'm supplying to companies, small companies. And I've also going to be supplying to a very large project soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So, yeah, fingers crossed. So we will see how that goes. But yeah, so that's kind of what I'm doing right now. And it's Baked by Amna. And I've got to a website, www.bakedbyamna.com is the website, right? But just a month ago, that same website, that same web address was my blog.
All right.
So that was my recipe baking blog, which I had been doing since 2017, I'd like to say. And I have accumulated like hundreds and hundreds. I mean, I started counting and I came up to 700 something recipes, and I wasn't even finished. So it's loads. and I just decided to change it to the website where you can actually buy my stuff now. And then I will be adding the blog into it. So yeah, before I got into the baking, I'm going backwards. It's so difficult. So yeah, I'm doing the baking. I'm supplying that now. And a few months prior to that, I was still kind of like, what am I doing? Because I have two small kids. One is 2 years old and one is one. But the two-year-old was going to kindergarten, but the one-year-old wasn't. So I was at home with him. And it was taking a lot of my energy, a lot of my time, because he's an extremely... which I'm blessed for. I'm very happy. He's an extremely excitable and energetic kid who has a lot of strong feelings about things. So he takes a lot of time when he's at home. But when he was at home with me before he started, which she started just 2 months ago, kindergarten, I was trying to debate, like, what is it that I'm going to do with myself? You know, I have worked in so many different art and creative industries, such as fashion, such as advertising, marketing. I mean, literally in that realm, I've pretty much done everything, you could say. But I got pregnant with my second one when the first one was just 6-7 months. So it was like back to back, and my pregnancies weren't like super great either. Mm-hmm. So after that, like, I was all like, do I apply for jobs? I started applying, wasn't getting anywhere, but I couldn't put my whole heart into it because my baby was still a baby. Yeah. And the other one was also still a baby, but he was like at school. There was so much happening. When I was at home, just, I would say maybe October, November, around that time, that's when I was like, you know what? F it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do baking. Okay. Yeah. That's it. And so I told my husband, I'm like, I'm going to do baking. And that's it. I'm going to make this work somehow. So he was like, good for you, which was a good reaction. So then I just went ahead and started like thinking about how I would do it. I wrote a list of things and what I need to get done before I get to that stage and how I'm going to present myself. So that's what I've been doing in the last 6 months. You know, it got me time to get to that stage, and it wasn't easy. And my decisions are very off the beat. And when I decide something, I just go for it. I'm like that. I just keep going. So, yeah.
And before baking, so I looked up your CV on LinkedIn. So you've worked in architecture. You've worked in fashion. You've been to New York Fashion Week. You did big brand advertising. There is a whole lot. And I know, having a design background myself, everybody has this idea of a very bohemian lifestyle. You're creative. And you like.
Oh, I wish it was that beautiful and romantic, but
it's
not. It's so
right?
Cutthroat, dog eat dog.
Yes. Yeah, so that is, it is cutthroat and it is dog eat dog. And your creativity is what you get hired for, but at the same time, it's the last thing you get recognition for, yeah. Right? Yeah. It's all the other thing, how you show up, what you learn, deadlines and project management, and. So what other people study to do, we never studied. I don't know how it was for you, but for me, it was the artsy side. And, you know, how do you then the psychology side, and how do you bring concepts together and generate ideas? And nobody told you about the business side. And then when
nobody.
You work in the business,
yeah,
it's like a rude awakening, because 5% designing, 95% all the other things that you had no schooling for.
No, exactly.
And within that culture of cutthroat, you manage to achieve a lot, and in a lot of different areas. So how come? Like, how did you get from A to B to C, from architecture to fashion to advertising? Like, tell me a little bit more about that.
Okay, so now I know you wanted me to go backwards, but I'm going to have to go from the start.
All
now,
right,
okay?
Cool.
Because
absolutely.
There's no other way. It's going to get
yes.
super confusing otherwise.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a little girl, I had these feelings of I just wanted to draw. I wanted to get things out of my system. And it was this thing that would eat me inside, that I would just draw and draw. And funny story, I would draw so much that I would be in my world of drawing and painting, and people who paint and people who draw. Mm-hmm. That when you're in that, everything else around you is like silent and it's non-relevant.
It's like an alternative reality,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're living in your head,
you're in this,
and at the same time, you're making it come out of your
exactly.
head.
Exactly. So you don't pay attention to anything around you. And when I was a kid, those drawings would end up on the walls of the house. It would be my mom's lipstick I would be using. It would be nail polish. It would be whatever I could get my hand on. It would be everywhere. And yeah, I got yelled at all the time for it, you know. But it was like a way of getting my things, whatever's inside of me, out. And so like my whole family was like, Amna did it, you know, again. So they got me like this huge A1, A0 poster, kind of like with the pages you could rip off. And I had pens everywhere. My room was all like white walls and I could just go bananas, you know. So ever since I was a kid, this was inside of me. And a lot of the times I would be drawing clothing. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a fashion designer. Like, I just wanted to. My dad was very strict, not strict, but he was like strict in terms of what we want to do with our life, you know, like education and jobs and whatever. So he just wanted to make sure we were good financially. So when I told him I wanted to become a fashion designer, he was like, you're not going to make any money out of that. You know, and then he basically was like, nope, you have to prove to me that you'll be able to do something in this. Because I don't see how I can be okay with this.
Yeah. How does this have legs?
How does it? And so I started winning awards. I started getting recognized for paintings because I kept pushing myself. And it ended up being that I was in architecture when we moved to Chicago. We moved as family to Chicago.
Oh, before I got a design scholarship to Japan at 16, 17. And then when I came back, we moved to Chicago, and there I started studying architecture. And I got Blue Ribbon Awards for some of my architectural drawings and stuff. And then at that point was when my dad actually by himself just came and said, you know what? I trust that you'll be able to succeed in this and you'll make a career. So, yeah, do what you want, Omna. And that's when I was like, shit, okay, I'm going to become a fashion designer.
Yes.
You know, so I kept going. And yeah, I just started like doing my stuff. We moved to the UK. I finished up my bachelor's in marketing and like it was in the design area, wasn't fashion, and it was Japanese. And then I got a job, like I started working as a menswear designer way back. And I did designs for the South African rugby team as well. So it was like men's sports kind of that vibe. I didn't care. I was like, I'll take it. Yes. And I love designing menswear. I love it. And I prefer that than to women's wear. Because it's so architectural and it makes me feel good when I do it. I don't know. And then after that, when I did my master's in Italy, and I went into more 3D design and graphic design and stuff like that. And then when I finished, I still had this like itch of I need to do fashion. I need to do it. And obviously I was in Italy. So, you know, it kind of gets into your system as well, you know. So when I came back, I moved to New York. I lived with one of my best friends in a very nice place in New York. I would never be able to afford it. So I'm very happy that she is my best friend. And so I just started. I was working at a bakery there while at the same time lugging along my clothes in bags and everything to this place, to that place, doing photo shoots, getting things done. I like really stuck it through in New York, like one of those I want to become somebody New Yorker, you know, that story. And then one thing led to the next. I started working at Alice and Olivia. I designed there for a little bit. And then I just kind of was like made some connections and I got myself into a runway at New York Fashion Week.
What age were you at that point?
I was 27, 8.
Yeah, okay.
26.
So that was after a bachelor, after a master.
Yeah, after master's. Yes. Yeah, it was after my master's. Mm-hmm. And that's when it happened. And up until then, I was doing things here and there, but nothing was like set in stone. Then I did my master's. And then after that, I was like, that's it. This is what I'm doing. And then I just went at it. But I left very quickly after I got myself into New York Fashion Week.
Okay.
And it was very much kind of like, shit, I'm not that person. Because I remember that feeling. I was standing in front of people I did not know, taking lots of pictures of me. And then there was this model that just came and stood next to me. And he was like, over here, and someone else that came sit, and over here. And that feeling was just like, oh, I'm getting like chills. I was drowning in it. I just wanted to get out. I wanted to get out from there. And I'm like, I can't do this.
So what everybody dreams of getting finally the attention and having those click from the cameras.
Not what I wanted. And I was so shocked. I was so shocked with myself because I know I wanted to make clothes and I know I wanted to become big, but I don't think I realized what that meant, what that entailed and what that brought with it, right? I remember coming home that night, I called my mom and I was like crying. I was like, Mom, this and this and this happened, you know? And she's like, well, Omna, if you're going to do this, you have to toughen up. Yeah. Like that is the life. If you're going to choose that life, that's what's going to happen. And I was like, I can't do this. So I just ended it. Mm-hmm. Like it was cutthroat over and I left.
Okay.
Picked up everything, left, came back to pick up the rest of the stuff.
Yeah. A lot of clothes. A lot of clothes.
Which I still have in lots of places. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I came back to the UK, stayed with my parents, worked a little over there in fashion. And then I slowly kind of, I don't want to do that. I don't want anything to do with it. So I started applying for design jobs, like a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, this is quite fun, actually. So I went into it and slowly, it wasn't very slow actually. It was like, as soon as I got my first job, I knew I was like, oh, an advertiser? That's me. Like, I'm totally there. I can design, I can market, I can sell shit. I'm like, I'm there, you know? So that's what I did. And I worked with very big brands that were showcased in multiple countries. And I was in charge of a lot of marketing and numbers I hadn't even thought about, businessy thing. It was a lot like big stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how I got there. And then from there, I
met my husband in Sweden and I moved to Sweden. And that's when I was working about 13, 14 hours a day. And when I moved to Sweden, I just decided I'm just going to take a break. And I did. I took a break for about 2 months, not doing anything. I just needed a break. Like, I just needed a real break. And I had just been newly married, you know, so it was nice. And then I started baking macarons because I couldn't find any here. And I started becoming obsessed because that's the person I am. When I do something, I'm like Roadrunner. I just keep going. So I think I baked minimum about 150 to 200 macarons almost a day. And it was like until I got it right.
Yes.
And I went, those 2 months, I say I did not do anything, but this is what I was doing. And then slowly, slowly, when I got it right, I started giving it to people. And then I'm like, I wonder if I can make a croissant, you know, and I wonder if I can make this or that. And then when I started making them, I started writing the recipes down because I'm an 80s kid. I still use a pen and paper. So it was going all over the place. And you was like, why don't you just put it on the computer so you don't lose it? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, maybe I should do a blog so I could just put all my recipes there. Yeah. Nobody else needs to see it, but it's all like consolidated, you know? So we just started doing that. And then because I'm creative, I just started taking, I saw like things of pictures and Instagram was there. People were on Instagram. It wasn't like so into into Instagram at that time. But yeah, it was like pretty prominent still as social media. So I started taking pictures like other people. And it just became a bloody obsession that I couldn't let go.
Yeah.
And then I got a job and I was working there with Sony at that time. And then, but I was still doing this. So this baking was like tormenting me because it was like what I was thinking about in the mornings and after work and everything. I was like, oh, I could do this and I can do that. And if I do a ta-ta-ta, I could do it like this. And if I do that, I could do it like this. You know, like this is stuff I was thinking about when meetings were really boring at Sony. Sorry, Sony. But, you know, it's kind of where my brain drifts off to the creative part because there was a lot of non-creativity that I was doing at work. Because being, like you said, being creative is another thing. But then you don't prepare yourself for all the extra bits that come with it. And so that kind of like was putting me down. And then I was picking myself up by baking. And then I went to Hela Sverige Bakar, which is the Swedish version of the Great British Bake Off. And I did not win. But I passed middle. So I was like one episode, more than halfway. But I'm very blessed for that opportunity because I had never been in a situation where it was like bakers who were like intense with multiple cameras in your face. So I kind of just kept working. But then I got pregnant and pregnant again. So then, it just kind of like
and
pushed
me. And now you're
here. Yeah, I kind of got waved into this. Yeah. But then when I do, I think, honestly, if I found something else that was creative that I could be obsessed about, I would probably be doing that right now. Because I think my jobs when I landed in Sweden weren't as creative as I thought it would be.
They hardly ever are, right?
You know?
Yeah.
So I think the macaron obsession pushed me here.
Yeah.
But had I been obsessed with wallpapers, maybe I'd be an interior designer right now.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, I just needed to be creative somehow. That was it.
It's funny. We are so similar. Like, I can't bake. I find baking extremely frustrating because it's this chemistry of you mix it all front and then you can't save it. You have to put it in the oven and then see if it works or not.
Yeah.
But I'm a cook. Like, I love to cook.
It's more of like, oh, pinch of this and
Like in the middle of this, like it's too watery or it's too creamy or it's too salty. Like you can always save it somehow, right? And for me, this is the creativity part as in the moment, like what do I need? My husband is like you, but he's an engineer and he does the baking. And for him, it's so funny hearing you talk about baking as creative because for him, there's absolutely nothing great.
And you know what? Those bakers probably make it so perfect.
Yes.
Like the edges are completely straight.
That's his thing.
And that's the glaze is completely like perfect on top of those strawberries and stuff. And me, I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. Let's just do this.
Right.
Let's just add some this and add some of that. Ta-da.
So I met you through, she told me a story. And I've heard the story in a different context and I heard it in a different version. And I remember when I heard it, I was like, this is what I want to talk to you about. And that's the thing. You did so many things. And in hindsight, it all makes sense because one led to another. And that's why you had such a problem going backwards because, right?
Yeah.
But there is a whole lot of decision making that needs to happen.
Yeah.
When you go places and do things and sometimes do several things at the same time. And what we hear others talk about and when we read articles or something, or when we meet other people, a whole lot of people say yes to a whole lot of things. Mm-hmm. And when I heard you now tell this story the way you did, it sounded like a whole lot. Oh, she said yes to this and yes to this and yes to this. The first time I heard this story was the other way around. You told it as, I said no to this so I can do that. Yeah. I said no to that so I can do this. And I was so impressed by saying like, damn, you did so much, but your decision-making process was really reflective. And always say, yes, I mean, there's a stubbornness to you, like saying no to your dad, like, what, you think I can do it? I'll prove you wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I will not have your vision of me. I will have my vision of me. So no to you and yes to me.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, the girls that found it, she told me a story with you. They all went on to start the house, the next project, building on that project. Yeah. And there's a lot of enthusiasm. It's now everywhere. But you again said no. You said, like, this is amazing what we did with She Told Me a Story. Yeah. I want this. And you keep pushing the sugar. You keep showing up. But you said no to the others when everybody's so enthusiastic. And when it's easy to say yes if there's a hype around it. Yeah. And again, you said no. So why did you say no? And tell me a little bit about what you... Because clearly you said yes to something else.
Yeah. So I said yes to She Told Me a Story because that is something that I needed. I needed it for myself because we need it. Because it is a need that women have to... Like, it is amazing. And it is something so beautiful and so powerful that it has helped me. The house at that time, I was going through, what do you call it? My words are like, you got
postnatal?
Me.
Postnatal?
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
I was going through depression from my pregnancies and because it was so close and I'm not that kind of person that takes breaks, right? And I didn't understand what to do with myself because I was like, I'm not doing anything. I have a kid. And everybody's like, yeah, but you have a kid. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but no.
Where's the output here?
I don't see it. I don't see it. So at that time, there was that was happening with me and I didn't realize it myself. And although there was a lot of hype with the house and still is, and although they're doing so well, you know, who they are and everything, I got it. But I didn't really feel that I was the right person for that. I don't feel that I should be there and be connected to that at that moment because there was so much of other things that was happening in my life where I had to sort myself out.
Yeah.
I had to know who Amna was. Yes, she's part of She Told Me a Story. Yeah, she bakes, but that's all she does. She bakes on the side. She blogs, right? And yes, she used to be a pretty freaking hardcore advertiser and designer. But who is she now? I mean, she's a mom of two kids. She's going through postpartum depression. Other than that, who am I? And I just felt like I couldn't take on another project at that point because it was so early in the stages of the house as well. You had to put so much time into it, which I think they still do, but I had to put so much time into it and I didn't have that because I just didn't know what was going on with me, you know? So that's why I was like, I can't do this. So I just said, no, I need to focus on myself.
I get that. And in the meantime, what it looks like for somebody like me who sees you every now and again and catches up with you for not doing much, you're doing a whole freaking lot. So right now, Amna brought me samples because she's not just baking and not just offering to cater you. You also developed a line of frozen goods. And I'm looking here at the frozen cookie dough that she brought me. It's like, bake it at home, bake it yourself. I was just like... Wow, like how did it come to this now?
Well, like I said, I'm an advertiser, right? I'm a marketeer. By nature, this is my trait, part of my personality. I design stuff, I create things, but then I'm like, okay, what can I do with it? And I thought there was a lot of situations where I was giving cookie dough because I couldn't be bothered baking it for people to my friends.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I could just sell these.
Yeah.
Like, it takes 12 minutes for people from frozen into the oven and you have ooey gooey, yummy, delicious cookies that you don't get in Sweden. Like you just don't get the hard, they're very delicious cookies here. No offense, Swedes. But you know, they're not the kind that you get in the US or in North America or in England or whatever. You know, the gooiness in the center and stuff. And I'll just do this and see where it goes. And then from that, I'm like,
wonder if people feel the same about cakes. Like, maybe a lot of people don't know how to bake, or they don't want to bake, or they don't want to mess up their kitchen. They're not like me, you know, like going through all the trouble of getting all the sugar and measuring and everything. And
it's a science again.
Yeah, exactly. I could do it, just not doing just it. Being worried, will the cake actually flop when I take it out or
you
not?
You spend 3-4 hours of your life and then it's like a pancake and not a...
Exactly. And you have kids at home that are probably expecting a cake, you know? So I developed a recipe with buttercream that you can freeze for up to 3 months. And I was like, put it in a box and just see where it goes.
Yeah.
So that's it. You get a box of 3-layered cakes and you get 2 buttercreams. So you get sprinkles and you get a piping bag, like a literal DIY kit for those that just don't want to go through the hassle, right? Yeah. You could just pretend this is like your creative box for you to do something for yourself and for someone else, you know? So...
And then you can eat it because those freaking mandalas, you cannot eat them.
You can't eat them. So you can eat it, you can share it, or you don't have to share it, you know? Yeah. And you can do so much with it. Like, the opportunity is, like, amazing. So I just thought, okay, let's just do this and try out. I don't think too much on things. I just do. When I get it in my head, I'm like, this could work.
Yeah.
But if I feel that it can't work, I say no.
Mm.
So I'm just like, you know, I'm going to change it, do something else, because I think that can't work, but this can work. So I just continue with it. That's why I went with this.
If you can take like an outside perspective, take one Amna outside who looks at Amna who's sitting here and Amna who used to be, how do you make your decisions? Like, is there like a red thread? Is there a questions you ask yourself? Would you say it's a plain, I'm very aware who I am and who I am not?
I can tell you right now. And my brother says this to me all the time. I make my decisions from my heart.
Yeah.
If I feel good, then I'll do it. If I don't, then I'll say no, and I won't look back. So it's like when my dad said, you have to prove it to me somehow, you know? And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, this is just how it is. So it's like when I know that my body is telling me inside my heart, inside my soul, like if I'm not happy, then I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And I need to be 100% okay in my heart to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And usually creative people are like that. I would think most of them probably have this feeling of, do I feel good? Because if I'm not, I can't be creative. And this will lead me to stress. And if I'm stressed, then I will get depressed, you know? Because nobody does well with stress, but creative people are worse when that happens to them, because that's literally their happiness is what makes things happen.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, we all know a whole lot of depressive artists and stuff, but it comes from your emotional world, right?
Exactly.
It feeds from what you feel, and that's what they can tap into.
A feeling.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. If my feeling is not good, then I'll say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I don't.
I mean, I feel always so connected to you because we have so much in common. Like, you are a child of immigrants. I'm a child of immigrants. Like, you moved a lot. I moved a lot. This is currently my 7th country that I live in. You had your kids back to back. I had my kids back to back. Mine are 15 months apart. Yours too, right?
Exactly.
You have 2 boys. I have 2 boys. Yeah. Like, where are we not the same?
Yeah.
And when I asked you in the questionnaire up front, like, what do you want to talk about? You said, I have imposter syndrome with everything that I've achieved. Yeah. I have imposter syndrome. I do so much, but I also feel the need that I have to justify myself for doing all these things.
Yeah. Gosh, that's a question.
Like for everybody who's just listening, just like let that sink in. Like I'm not sitting here. You've just heard her story. She's been all around the world. She does all these things. She's laughing on this podcast. She tells us that her creativity and her decision-making process is fed by her internal life and her feelings that she has. And yet there is an element of overthinking.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but when I think about myself, it's like I'm incredibly afraid to take more space than I have to. There's a crack in the wall. Well, let me fill in the crack. Like I can fix this wall by putting myself and be like putty and fill that crack. But oh my God, you know, I will not feel more than that. And obviously you feel with time very, very uncomfortable because all you give yourself in terms of space is that crack. And then you're afraid to get out of that crack and be somebody else or grow myself into something that I can see myself become. So how does that feed into all that you've done? And again, decision-making. You had some high stakes situations as, do I go to the US? Do I do fashion wing? Do I do all these things? Tell me a bit about that.
That's a really good question. You know, it's really difficult to reflect on yourself when it comes to this, when it's like you're literally holding a mirror and you kind of have to think about that in that way. Like, oh, yeah, I do have that. And I do have this imposter syndrome. And perhaps that's what pushed me to do all those things, because I was like, I'm not that person. So I have to try to be that person. Mm-hmm. And whilst I'm trying to be that person, I knew I wasn't that person.
Yeah.
And then I fall back again, being, oh, I'm not that person. And then all these situations that keep coming towards you. Mm-hmm. And I just can never, I don't know how to answer this question, because my family is full of extremely educated and very, very smart people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went to a school here and I remember I was sitting in my very first math class at gymnasium and the teacher looked at me and she goes, Chowdhury, is Pharaoh's your brother? And I'm like, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm expecting big things from you. I'm like, shit. Yeah. Oh my God. Math is my worst subject, but okay. So it kind of is like this living up to something or someone, or it's not, they haven't done anything. They're just living their life like normal, you know, mm-hmm. but I just keep feeling like I'm just the la-di-da, you know, drawing on walls. And from this, I made it into something. But can I justify that as a proper career because I'm not continued working in it? I don't know. Who am I? And I feel so like I'm, you know, I'm getting nervous talking about it, because I just think if I sit down and I tell someone, yeah, I'm really good at this, I will say that because it's the fact when I think that I am. But then I can never say that I am in this position.
Yeah.
Like when you asked me to do this, I was like, me? Why? I don't understand. Because, I mean, there's plenty of other people you probably want to talk to, you know? Like, who's me? Nobody knows me. Mm. And I kind of think of it that way. Mm. And I just never really, because I don't know. Maybe sometimes I am in that role. When I'm in a role, like when I was in the advertising role, right? I had to be that person. Mm-hmm. But then I'm not in that. I am actually not that person, you know, real life. Like, I don't know. And I don't know how to explain. I don't know.
Okay, then let me ask a different question, because people always say hindsight is always 20/20. So looking backward, it all makes sense. But in regards to this question, it's really hard. It worked out because you're here right now. It's hard to imagine different scenarios. So what about now? You have your projects going on and you want to take them somewhere. Do you have any strategies right now or techniques that you find helpful in managing yourself, in managing these doubts that might come up? What have you learned from the past that you are applying now? And you're like, okay, now I'm doing this baking business and I'm doing the frozen goods and I want to grow this. Shit will come up. This is how I will hold myself. Is there anything where you are like, you're actively thinking of, this is how I deal with myself?
I think I do keep reminding myself that it will take time, mm-hmm. and this will grow slowly, and I have to stay calm and patient. And patience is not very good. I don't have patience.
And in a design world, everything is so fast-paced, right? Yeah. Season.
Exactly. So it's like, it's not my best trait at all. But that is literally the one thing that I keep telling myself, it will take time. And I say it out loud and I say it to my husband. I say it, you know, out loud, this will take time. And that's why, and he knows it. He's such a laid back person.
Yeah.
So it's like, he tells me that, but him telling me that doesn't really help. So that's like literally the only thing I could say that could probably say that, yeah, it'll work out. I do have a little bit of a plan. I have structure. I have, you know, how to do things. I have little deadlines for myself where I need to meet. And I kind of go by that.
Yeah.
Kids, you're sick. I mean, it's this bad season. And stuff happens when that happens. You get sick. Stuff happens. Everything goes slow. So things don't happen at the right time. And I can get stressed out from it. And I can think this was a bad idea. And I'm never going to do this. But then straight away, I'm like, you know what? I'm on no one's schedule. I'm on my own schedule. So that's fine. If it didn't work out, I'm on my schedule. I'll just push it forward, but I'll still keep to a schedule. So it's kind of like I have to tell myself, I am my own boss now. Mm-hmm. And that is so different to what it has been. So I don't have anybody's schedule to adhere to. So I just think to myself that, okay,
I feel like I can't do this, but I can. I just need to restructure myself mm-hmm. and tell myself I can't do it because I am capable. I am strong and I'm capable of doing this. Mm-hmm. And it sounds weird, but I do tell myself that. Mm-hmm. And I speak to my mom. And my mom is a huge, huge help when things like this happen. Like when I feel like I can't. She studies psychology.
Yeah.
So she knows how to talk to you, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. So she knows straight away there's something up. I don't tell her, and then she gets it out of me, and then I tell her, and then she's like, you don't have to think this way. This is how you have to think, mm-hmm. and this is because you're doing good.
Yeah.
And that's, I just repeat it to myself, you know, yeah. But for me, for my own sake, like hearing that I have this and saying it myself yeah. that I have it is huge because it's not something I have ever, ever thought or talked about, you know. Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, this sounds great because I'm also studying psychology right now, right? And I chose to study positive psychology yeah. because I'm not the character to heal anybody and deal with the pathologies of broken. It's like I am so loud, so impulsive, so I would break probably more. Yeah. But I'm fantastic at getting things started, thinking them through and envisioning the goal, like the achieving part from activating to achieving. This is like my jam and everything in between. And I'm all for, and the more I read, the more I study, just that choosing, actively choosing. When we talk about the future is always many possibilities. There's not just one future, there's many futures. And you choose one. Yeah. And you choose who you are in that future. And you choose to believe. And by choosing to believe the best of yourself, that is massive. And people think that's like, how does that help? Like, it sounds like such a ridiculous thing to do. But it has a massive impact to realize I can think the worst of myself, or I can think the best of myself. And I choose to think like that. And that is a massive thing of how to have your own back, right? It starts with you yourself. And then obviously, yes, we need other people who reaffirm this. Mm. And that's what I like about She Told Me a Story, because we hear these stories from others and it's like, damn, that resonates so well with me because yeah. I've been there, I've done that. I feel, I'm not alone. Wait, this is not just me being weird.
Yeah.
Oh, you do the same. Yeah. Oh, thank God.
I know.
And obviously it's not good. Like if we're all having imposter syndrome, that's not a good thing. But hearing about it, talking about it, voicing it, and then next time I go home and I'm again like about to beat myself, I'm like, no. I can choose something else. I can choose to believe something else. And I know that this about me is not true because I know it not to be true about all the other amazing women that I met. And I'm one of them.
Yeah. It's so amazing because it took so long for me to get to that stage to think about it that way. Because I always thought I'm alone. Like I'm the only one feeling it. Nobody else knows how I'm feeling mm-hmm. because nobody else is feeling that way. And when She Told Me a Story started, I think from the very first one, mm-hmm. there was women crying. I was bawling. We were so connected.
And yeah, like good tears. Like good tears. Good so tears, witness. Yeah. So, oh my God, thank God. This yeah. relief, right?
Yeah. Like, This is how I feel too.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh. And then when someone says something else and I'm like, oh, yes, yes, I see myself saying those words, yeah. like being in that situation. So it kind of like, it really helped me a lot. And I mean, we're no psychologists. Mm-hmm. We just sit there and talk
yes.
like women do. Mm-hmm. And this is just a very friendly, closed, safe space to do it at.
Yeah.
And it's flourished because it's helped me. I can only speak for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I have spoken to a lot of the women and they've yes. always also given me very good feedback and everything. But I can only tell you about how I felt after and during it. And it basically has helped me grow and helped me realize that, yes, I can do baked, frozen stuff, you know, and I can start a business myself and I can achieve things, even though I knew I probably could do it. But even on those days when things go downhill, I'm like, I can still do this because mm-hmm. she did it.
Yeah.
And she's gone through a lot of stuff that yeah. I have too. And, you know, yeah, it'll take some time mm-hmm. and I'll be stressed on days mm-hmm. and I'm kicking myself on some days, but I can do it too.
Yeah. So at our meetings, we are mainly international people.
Yes.
The amount of Swedish people there is always some, but
it's minimal. Yeah.
And so, and you have had the experience of having one culture at home and growing up in a culture that values other things and lives differently. Yeah. What is it about culture and society that makes, that drives so many women to feel they're imposters?
I think historically, no matter where you are in the world, women have always been portrayed to be that home person, homebody, yeah, yeah, right? So in my home, well, I come from a Pakistani background. My parents are Pakistanis. But in my home, perhaps unlike many other Pakistani families or non-Pakistani families, I'm sure of, many have had this as well. But in my home specifically, my dad has always said, my daughters are like sons to me. Mm-hmm. He has always said, you can't do anything that they can't do.
Yeah.
Which, hence, what do you want to do with the rest of your life was the question he asked all of us, including us girls, when we were 13. Because mm-hmm. he's like, you can also do it. So I don't see why I shouldn't be asking you this question either, you know. He's like, I need you to stand on your own 2 feet. I need you to be able to be financially responsible and not depend on any guy or any other person. So my household has always been very like, women can do everything. And my mom has showcased that as well through her life. She's capable of everything, right? So I had a very strong background in that. But for some reason, in the working world that I was in, mm-hmm. worked in Sweden, I've worked in Turkey, I've worked in the US, in Canada, in the UK, you know, I lived in Italy as well mm-hmm. and Japan. So mm-hmm. I understand cultures mm-hmm. very well through and through, right? And in that environment, when I'm by myself outside, women have never gotten that recognition like they should. Like in Japan, most people probably still don't know. Women are not really cared for as much. And it's very difficult for them to be respected, mm-hmm. especially in work. And I think it's because men still think, well, they're starting to think of this less, but yeah. they have thought that they are responsible for everything around us, mm-hmm. that they created it, that they've done it, you know, that they are the ones who put in the effort to give us this environment, give it to us. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. When you think about it, there's a lot of women that have done a lot of stuff, but we never really got the opportunity to showcase what we were able to do because they always thought we weren't able to do it because we were homebody people.
Yeah.
Now, when women are starting to get there and say, yeah, we can do it, that's when this glitch happens where many women mm-hmm. probably think, can we actually do it? Because they've done it, but can we actually do it? Because mm-hmm. they keep telling us we can't really do it. Mm-hmm. So maybe psychologically, we just keep telling ourselves, like, are we able to do it, to make it there?
Yeah.
And maybe that's where this imposter syndrome comes from. And for myself, I've been in situations where men are like, you know, they just go for it. You say no, they'll still go for it.
Yeah.
You say no again, they'll still go for it. But you say no to a woman like 3-4 times, more like
less than that, yeah.
Yeah, it just becomes more difficult for us to go back.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we don't have those, that kind of, you know, stubbornness, but mm-hmm. we're starting to get it more and more, mm-hmm. which is great.
Right. So speaking about the future and maybe the hope that you're seeing, and I know that you're not in a company right now, but you're building your own thing and you want it to grow. You want it to be bigger. So even though you are now a one-woman show, you still have to self-lead. Like, you have to demonstrate self-leadership. And you have to set a culture in place. And it starts with you.
Yeah.
And from there on, anything else, when you grow, will be a reflection of how you treated yourself. So what is your focus for the future? What do you think you need to empower yourself to be confrontational when confrontation is needed or to overcome obstacles because they will come. Looking at what's ahead of you for you, how do you practice? It's a big word. Maybe you don't call it self-leadership, but how do you have your own back? How do you show up for yourself? And how do you make sure that tomorrow and the day after you can do what you see yourself doing, what you imagined?
Well, recently, I have started to, like you said, stand up for myself. Mm-hmm. I decided that I have to take a stand when I feel like I should be taking a stand.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times when I worked for someone else, I had to do it because it was for someone else. And I had my boss in mind. Like, mm-hmm. I have to go answer to someone else. So I have to stand up. But when it comes to me, I've caved in, mm-hmm. like, a lot of the times. Yeah, I may seem like a very hardcore person when I'm working, yeah. but I cave in. Like, I'm like, okay, then that's fine. If that doesn't go through, I have to figure something else out, whatever. But no. Recently, I'm like, no, this is my opinion, and I'm going to say it, and this is how I think it should be. And I need this to come at this time, or need that to be done at this time, and that's how it needs. Like, I've actually started to stand up for myself mm-hmm. a little bit more. I need to be able to be strong if I'm going to build something. Whether it's pushing She Told Me a Story into another field of beautiful opportunities, mm-hmm. or whether it's doing my baking thing, you mm-hmm. know? I've just started to make a stand and tell myself that, yeah, I can do it, and nobody's going to say no. And my opinion is just as valuable and as important as anybody else. And my me is important as mm-hmm. well. And how I want to do things. Like, yeah. if somebody says, well, maybe you should just put it in a bag, these frozen things, yeah. or maybe you shouldn't do it like this, yeah. or maybe you should go there or whatever. I don't see why you're doing that.
Yeah.
And now I just say, like, dude, this is how you do shit. This mm-hmm. is how I'm going to do it, because this is how I need to do it step by step. And that's right. a fact. So you can't say, like, you can say, give me your opinion, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am at that stage and I need to tell myself, yeah, you know what? You can say it now.
Mm.
You are capable of saying no and saying, like, no, I'm going to do it this way. Sorry. And if it goes wrong, then it's on me. But I'm going to do it. So it's like basically just giving myself more opportunity to be, what's the word, more, not control, but more like honest with myself and telling other people, you know, I can show up. I can say it.
Yeah, I call it for myself. I don't know if that's the right word, but I allow myself to take command. If I know.
Yeah.
Then I'm looking around. Nobody wants to pick it up.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pick it up, but I have command.
Yes.
Don't come then backwards. Yeah, but you should da-da-da-da. I'm like, no, no, no. You didn't want the responsibility of seeing this through. I'm the responsible one. I will listen to you. And if I see value in it, I will include it. But if I believe with the wisdom that I have, that this lived experience and knowledge about things, how things are done, I'm in command.
Yeah.
And I claim and I will hold that command. Yeah. That is that word for me. Yeah. Well, thank you, Amna. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amna, with all your projects, what do you need help with? Because my big thing is belonging and making the difference.
I love you.
Making the difference between, yeah, I'm an independent person. I can do shit by myself, but I don't have to do it alone. Like, we always exchange those two, independent and alone. It's like, yeah, I know that you can, like, you're capable and everything, but you don't have to do it alone. Like, who do you want to reach out to you when they hear it and they're like, damn, I want to work with Amna or be somehow involved in her universe? What kind of persons are you looking for in your life?
Well, I mean, I'm so small right now. I'm just starting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's so difficult because I don't even know where this can go. So maybe more creatives, or maybe people who either have done it or something like this before, or maybe someone that would probably want to just...
Some people from the food industry, restaurant businesses, something
exactly.
like that?
Exactly, something like that. That would be great. So I can get my foot in there, hopefully in some grocery store. I don't know.
Yeah.
But someone in the food and culture environment, or someone who's got super duper ideas that wants to kick around something with me and be like, why don't you try this thing as well? Yeah, something like that.
So logistically, right now, you're serving Malmö area?
Yes.
Lund, maybe?
Yes. Yeah, well, I have pickup and they're welcome to pick up.
Yes.
And I deliver some things, very limited things that can be delivered all over Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would love to be able to go to Copenhagen and mm-hmm. do this there. So it would be a great opportunity. So anybody in Copenhagen listening?
Yeah.
You know. Reach out.
Amazing Swedish fika with all the N700 something recipes you can find and come up with a concept for the people, right?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Cool. So fingers crossed for all your projects. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Ciao.
Bye.
Hey there. Before you rush off to your next task, remember, reflection is the critical component of learning and growth and innovation. Take a moment to think about what resonated with you from this conversation. What struck a chord with you and why? Because that is not just information. That is the valuable signal you should act on. And speaking of taking action, if you are eager to boost the mental and emotional well-being within your organization, reach out to me. Contact Nicole Scheltesig on LinkedIn or through this podcast for a consultation on empowering your employees to build a healthy mental and emotional can-do attitude and fostering a culture of resilience. Let's provide your team with the time and framework to reflect on their lives and take ownership of their well-being. Because taking ownership is engagement. How about we guide your team through a 360-degree life review? It is awareness that always precedes wise decision-making. Only the ones who know what is going on without getting wrapped up in the action are able to distinguish between valuable signal we should act on and noise that is clouding our judgment and we should learn to ignore. Together, we nudge your team's attention to how they are capable and how they can practice self-leadership. And as we wrap up today's conversation, let's also reflect on today's story. We are reminded of the profound impact community-focused projects can have on all of us. How can we leverage this momentum to drive positive change in our lives and communities? Or in other words, if today's episode resonated with you, reach out and connect with my guest. Thank you for joining us today. And together, let's say it with Obama's words. Yes, we can. We can cultivate hope and support and positive change for everyone we care about.